Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 76, recorded on Tuesday, September 11, 2012. Happy birthday, Jason Howe!
You really had to lead with that
one.
Happy birthday, Jason! We got a cake! Chad got a cake!
Yay. We talked about it internally without knowing.
We planned ahead. Uh-huh. I said happy birthday to you on Google Plus. Did you see that?
Yes, I saw that.
Okay, not on Facebook.
No, I got more happy birthdays on Google Plus than I did on Facebook.
Oh,
that's kind of interesting because Google did roll out that kind of birthday to Google.com.
Yeah. So my homepage just says, say happy birthday to Jason Howe.
The fourth show today that I've been with. So if you didn't know already, you definitely know that today is my birthday now. Great.
Okay.
It's because we love you, Jason.
And we have cake, and we're going to cut that cake later. You're going to blow out some candles.
We're going to eat it, too.
We're going to save it. So if you want to see Jason blow out those candles, you'll wait.
All right.
We also have a guest. Oh, yes. I'm Eileen Rivera, by the way.
I'm Jason.
And you know Jason.
I'm Ron.
And Ron. Joe Braidwood from London is here.
Joe.
He came all the way out.
Just for the show.
I flew here especially just for you.
Look at this. Hi. We also have a studio audience. This is wonderful.
Yeah, last time I was live down a grainy Skype wire, and this time I'm actually here.
Yes, Skyped in last time, and now he's a guest of the show.
Good to be here.
From SwiftKey, Chief Marketing Officer. So thank you very much for being here.
Thanks
and
for
flying all
me.
The way out. Now you've got other stuff going on, but you know, kind of worked out for your schedule.
I came just for you, Eileen. All the way.
It was a factor when you were planning your trip.
Yeah,
because of the Bay Area. Let me get on All About Android.
I've never been up in Petaluma before.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot warmer up here.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah. Thank
well,
you.
Well, welcome.
You bet. Awesome to have you on.
This week, we're going to be talking about Android OS distribution. We've got some Kindles to talk about, some Razors to talk about, and we are going to answer your mail. But the first thing I wanted to talk about was just something kind of kitschy. Google Glasses running Android. So
it's all over the
Fashion
news.
Week, and apparently... Yep. The models were wearing them already.
Of course,
what
because they're high fashion.
This is a lot of PR marketing dollars at work.
Yes,
because
it
guess
really
what?
Is. Those you mean they're not native Android users,
right? Yeah, because
they're early adopters.
Right, as we said at Google I/O, I will put money that those things on their faces are nothing more than just a nice plastic design, and there's no functionality in what they're wearing on there. That's my guess.
Yeah,
they did, and I don't know. I think they might have been streaming from the red carpet, so I think it might have been the similar where there's a camera. I believe there is a camera in there, but I still don't think Google Glasses. Until I see a snapshot of the display, I don't believe the thing exists.
I'm not going to believe it until they jump out of a plane.
That'll never happen.
I saw another picture on the runway with all of the women just kind of walking down and wearing them. But they weren't doing the head bop, taking the photos, or
right.
I don't think.
Or whatever it is they do to do that.
I still love the discussion you had with the Google employee at I/O where you're like, how does it work? And they're like, I can't tell you.
Oh, I know.
I can't show you. And you're like, well, what is it? Like, you got
there it is. There it is. See the ladies there introducing Palazzo. Oh, wait.
Hey, all right.
Yeah, that lady's
sorry
not wearing
about that. Chad got distracted.
I'm trying to find. There we go.
Is that one? Whoa, and then Chad. Okay. Well, you know, see, it works with fashion. They want to,
you know. That's what they want to show, yeah.
They want to show that it can actually work. And there's different colors. So the first photo matched the woman's dress. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Jason, do you have anything to say? You don't care.
He wants one for his birthday.
Actually, I would take a pair of Google glasses.
Oh, he meant the Google glasses. Okay, all right.
The glasses. Thank you.
Keep it clean. Keep it clean.
What is
NSFW
going on
is in 2 hours.
I did not
NSFW
ask for this.
NSFW is a different show in 2 hours.
It's one of those kind of shows.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, how about some news?
Let's do it.
So, mañana is a big day for another ecosystem, another mobile ecosystem. And curiously enough, our fearless leader tweeted today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mere moments ago.
I was so excited when you told me. So,
our fearless leader,
Andy Rubin, just said, do we have his face? because I can read this, but you could look at the text, but I can read it for you. There have been half a billion Android activations to date, with over 1.3 million added every day.
Every day.
Just in case you forgot, you know, in the midst of a lot of hoopla that's happening pre, during, and post, Android is here.
Andy Rubin never makes me not laugh. It never gets old. It's been a while since we got Andy. I like it.
It's on an infinite loop.
He hasn't said anything in a while.
He doesn't tweet a whole lot, but he does tweet the day before Apple events.
Oh, yeah. Surprising.
For a strange... Well, I saw a lot of talking on Twitter. Ina Fried, All Things D, in particular...
Just basically saying,
it's interesting how you actually use Twitter, you know, a few days before an Apple event happens, which it's great PR in the sense that, if he comes out with something amazing like this, and, you know, you can decide for yourself whether this is amazing or not. It's pretty impressive numbers. That enters the conversation,
right?
You know, in many ways tomorrow, because Android is the competitor, the main competitor to iOS. So.
Other numbers out about the latest Android distribution stats. Jelly Bean is at 1.2%. Check that out. But Gingerbread still dominates at 57.5%. If you look at this graph, though, Ice Cream Sandwich at 4.0.3 and above is at 20.8%. So that's pretty good. We're starting to see those Eclair, Froyo, Donut, Cupcake. We just need to get those off. Just X that out.
What this struck me is if you scroll further down, you've got that graph of the adoption. And there are roughly as many people using 2.2 or below as there are using 4.0 or above. More or less.
That's true.
I really feel sorry for those people.
I know.
they don't know what they're missing.
Some of them probably don't care. Because they're just buying cheaper phones.
Sure. Yeah.
Or they still have their old phone and then, you know, they're in a contract and they don't want to up or whatever. They just, you know, some of them don't care.
But a lot of apps don't even support 1.5, 1.6 anymore. And, you know, Eclair and Froyo are fine. But, you know, there was a real leap forward with Gingerbread. A lot got better on the platform. And it's just a shame that people don't realize that it's out there and waiting for them.
I know. I mean, it is good to see Gingerbread dominate because that is, thank God, moving forward. But I long for the day when the other four are gone off this chart.
I don't know if they're ever gone.
I don't know if
they'll
ever be gone. They never will be gone. There are people still running Windows like early Windows versions.
Okay, Cupcakes at 0.2%.
But that's quite a lot of 1.5 billion, 1.3.
That's true.
Half a billion. That's still quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and if anything, it just shows the market penetration of these handsets and like what we've offered. One of the many themes of the show over the past year, in addition to patents, has been just market penetration and hardware availability. Mm-hmm. And we saw in the past year a flooding of the market by, you know, companies in all different flavors and variations of the phones running different operators. This is what's going to happen. I mean, this is the Apple argument that it's you know. But even then, I have friends who are running iOS like 3. Right. You know, like they probably have a similar chart of how many people are running older versions of iOS. So it always happens. There's always lag.
Ultimately, you're just gunning for, obviously, the majority of people to get within operational range here. And I would consider anything older than Froyo, because Froyo is still, I would say, reasonably supported by many apps. Before that, I mean, you're running a horribly crippled experience on Android.
No joke. Over Labor Day weekend, I was in LA. I was at the FYF Fest, and I was watching one of my favorite bands play, and dude in front of me taking pictures with the G1. Mm-hmm. And I should have taken a picture, except I was moshing, so I couldn't. But I was like,
I'm impressed.
I was like, wow, dude's got an old phone. And like, remember that it was that tiny screen and the old camera?
Yeah.
And he was just taking pictures and perfectly content.
Well, that's the thing, you know, you get phones like that, and it's a 24-month contract.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a long time, especially if you think about how many times they're bringing out new versions of the operating system, new devices all the time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, you know, average folks out there are going to get a handset, they're going to walk around with it proudly for 2 years, and we forget that, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our tolerance for, oh, this phone's getting sluggish and I need something faster.
Ours is a lot lower than others. And also keep in mind, you know, in the root and ROM community, G1 is still supported. Any of those big devices, you know, even the original Motorola Droid, I believe, has an Ice Cream Sandwich, you know,
ROMs
coming out for it now. So even those old devices, and I can't even imagine how slow that experience must be. It's there. Man, if you really want to extend the life of your ancient device, you can. So
that's crazy. But some more interesting Google stuff came out from Eric Schmidt, of all people. Remember dear old Eric? Our good friend Eric?
Of course.
During Motorola's press event that happened last week, right? Back on the 5th. When they were talking, you know, about the 1.3 million new Android devices per day, he did admit that of the 1.3 million, only 70,000 of them are actually tablets. And he actually admitted that we were late to tablets.
70,000.
70,000 tablets out there. So, I mean, so everybody kind of ran wild at this, that Google admitting that they were late to that, which is an obvious, I mean, it's like, it's a slap at the forehead, no duh. Because we've seen so many tablets from other companies for the past, you know, 2 years now. But I got to say, you know, in retrospect of that, or whatever, in contrast to that, if they're late to tablets and they show up with the Nexus 7, I think they're off to the, it's going to work out in the end, I think.
Well, you know, better to show up with a device that people are overwhelmingly, for the most part, positive about,
right?
Than, you know, coming up with a little turkey.
Right. Yeah. I mean, imagine, I mean, like the reaction that the Amazon Kindle had when it first came out and all that stuff. If that was Google's first entry, was not a top of the line kind of tablet. So they clearly, you know, while they realized they were late to tablets, I think they were smart about it. Which I think there's a difference. There's a difference between just rushing to the market because you're late.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they needed to focus, period, initially. I mean, when you think about how long it took iOS to kind of go from the iPhone to eventually the iPad coming out, I have to imagine that the amount of time between the very first iPhone and the iPad is greater than the amount of time between the very first Android device
and the
very first Android tablet. I could be completely wrong, but I mean, even then, I mean, the Android kind of ecosystem, as it were, they had to focus on that and make that strong to even compete in the marketplace before they then split their efforts and, you know, worked on the tablet, which was kind of it's not that it was a new idea, but it had newfound interest because of the iPad.
Yeah. So the iPad first came out in 2010. So it's been 2 years of the iPad.
All right.
And the iPhone came out in 2007.
Right.
So there's 3 years between development of the iPhone.
So
to
it actually could be on.
It's a lot less. It's like a year. You're talking more like a year and a half. I mean.
But you know, by that point, everyone had seen the iPad. They knew about it. So really, it was that Google had to catch up.
And there was more than enough time for Samsung to just they didn't copy the tablet, right? Sorry.
That was the one thing that they were.
But it was the Motorola Zoom, wasn't it? Yeah. It was the first, Honeycomb tablet. Yeah. But Honeycomb was interesting because it came as the first major step once Matias Duarte had joined, you know, to try and make everything look more beautiful and to try and really like redo the whole OS. And then finally you had Ice Cream Sandwich come out for all devices. But it was only really, I think, after the success of the Fire that Google realized that, oh, maybe we should be doing one of these cheaper, more lightweight, 7-inch style tablets.
Right.
But on SwiftKey users already, we've got the most, because we have a tablet product and a phone product.
Right.
And in the few months that it's been since Google I/O, since the Nexus 7 came out, that's already become the most popular tablet that we're on. Oh. So the adoption has really been, you know, quite impressive almost overnight. And I think that, you know, you've said it yourself, this is a much better device than some of those clunky 10 inches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's also interesting, actually, I had two thoughts. It's because one is that we had that time, because Google's also doing the OS. And so we had that fracturing of the, well, there's the tablet version, and there's the phone version, and now we're going to make it one. So they had to almost stumble a little bit on the OS side, and they almost let the OEMs do the testing for them. We're like, let's let Motorola, let's let Asus, let's let all these guys build tablets for them, let's see what mistakes they make, and then let's learn from that, make the OS tight, and then come out with our good product, which honestly is pretty smart. But secondly, looking at the numbers, 70,000 is so small.
So
5% of overall.
Yeah, really. It's small.
Way tiny.
I mean, 70,000, that's like a stadium full of people. Like, that's a football game.
But that's
like
every day. Yeah. I mean, that's still quite true. A lot.
Yeah.
But you know, I just think, you know, still I talk to people and I'm saying, you know, what do you think about Android tablets? They're like, no, I'll get an iPad.
Right.
Even if they're the biggest Android fanboys I've ever met on the phone. So I think it, you know, it's still, there's still a gap to be closed there.
Well, the experience,
and there's a perception
too.
To be.
Yeah, perception, to be there's an there is the experience, there's the apps.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel for tablets, It's the apps that matter. Yeah. And there's a lot of apps that are still content. Lacking and not looking really amazing on the Nexus 7 still. Maybe that's changing, but it's there's still a gap.
And I know we're early adopters, and I know we're kind of ahead of the curve, but like already, like I have an iPad. I have an iPad 1, admittedly, but like I don't really. I have it in a Dodo case, so I don't feel as if the thicker form factor is a deterrent for me. Mm-hmm. It does what I need it for work. But I have my Nexus 7, and since the Nexus 7 came out when we went to I/O, what has it been? It's been 2 months, mm-hmm. 3 months, mm-hmm. 2 months. I've completely shifted over to it. I'm only using the iPad for work. And actually, this morning I was going to the gym, and I normally use my Nexus 7 because of MX Player, and I can watch whatever video files I want. And this particular morning I didn't have anything to watch, and so I'm like, oh, I'll watch Netflix, because I'm watching baseball, the Ken Burns documentary. Mm-hmm. And in my head I was like, let me take the iPad because it's a bigger screen. And then I stopped. I'm like, I'm just gonna stick with the Nexus 7. And so even when given the opportunity to go up, I wanted to stick with the device that I've been using for the past couple of weeks because it felt better, because it just felt right. Like I've that loyalty is there. It's become like almost, you know, motor memory, you know,
right,
I mean? Where
right.
like when I need my tablet, I grab the Nexus 7.
Well,
except when I'm leaving to come to the show and I forgot it today.
Exactly. Now, I have been such a champion of the 7-inch form factor.
Yeah.
So what happens if that iPad mini comes out in October?
Yeah.
And they've already capitalized on the tablet market. I'm just saying. There's a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting to see if they grab it, because this is my favorite form factor. The iPad is so big. No.
Do you foresee a 7-inch, if that is the case, and a 7-inch iPad comes out, would that trump the 7-inch Nexus 7 experience for you? Like, would you be tempted to go back? Considering that you're pretty satisfied with this now, like I think in my head, I think about, you know, the way Android tablets launched with Honeycomb and, you know, late to the game and all that. I wish that it were mature enough to have launched like this, because I think then we wouldn't be having as much of this kind of conversation. But the unfortunate thing is the damage has kind of already been done from a perception standpoint that Android tablets, you never know what you're going to get. You're going to get a tablet that operates like a phone, and they're going to shoehorn it in. Those aren't problems that we necessarily have now with the experience on tablets like the Nexus 7. But that perception is still there for people that maybe don't follow this all the time.
And I'll in comparing apples to apples, like I don't like the 7-inch form factor. That's what's crazy is that I think it's too small. I actually can't. I mean, I use the elliptical at the gym, and that's fine. But like when I'm on the treadmill, I can't use it because it falls off. Like the iPad is actually better because it's bulkier.
Put the plastic thing.
No, I don't have one. I go to a ghetto gym. Me and Sarah go to a ghetto gym in Hayes Valley. But but the thing is that. And I just went through this weekend. iPad was collecting dust. I had like 47 apps that needed to be updated, so I went through updating them all. It was a pain in the butt. You have to enter in your password every third app, and like
I
was comparing the experience to what's going on Nexus 7, where it just updates automatically. Yeah. Everything just works. The little red notification on the iPad, the push notification on the iPad, are maddening. It's like everything is a notification. Everything, you know, like I feel as if I've got a more serene experience with Android now.
But
than
if
iOS.
You're talking about the app ecosystem, and you're talking about giving it to your kids and all the games, it always comes out first on iOS, and there's awesome games that are a year later coming out on Android.
Right. I'm not playing games.
Just saying. Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's always going to be a market for iPad. Yeah. But I think that the other thing that really differentiates it is it's obviously integration with Google services. So, if you use Google Apps for Business for your work email, or if you're a big Gmail fan, you know, just that experience on the tablet is so much better than it is on the iPad.
Yeah.
And you do have Jelly Bean, and I love Google Now, and, you know, all that stuff on there.
My next step is I want to get an external keyboard, because I was actually talking to MG Siegler.
You don't need one, you just need SwiftKey, right?
Right, well, SwiftKey, yes, of course. Well, when I'm on the road, when I don't have it, I use SwiftKey. But
that's obviously the main advantage to Android tablets. Yeah.
MG was talking about using tablets purely for email and, like, work and stuff like that. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I haven't taken that jump yet, and so... SwiftKey aside, I just need to find the right piece of hardware and then see if I could use it as a productivity, like, you know, device. Because that's the one thing, I'm not doing email, I'm not doing Google Docs,
some of that longer form stuff in particular.
Tablets!
A little frustrating. Well, let's shift gears and talk about our favorite thing in the world, Samsung and Apple. Oh, God, I just wish this would go away. But this is kind of interesting. How do we all think Samsung has fared in light of the patent decision a few weeks ago.
Because I looked at this and I thought, this is a surprise to me that people even think it's going to be an issue, because the patent fight is just this ongoing thing.
Yeah.
I saw it and I thought, oh, that's expensive. You know, $1 billion, that's a lot of money. But I didn't think that that was going to hamper Samsung in any way mm-hmm. in the consumer perspective. It was just going to make their finance people, you know, have a bit of a, mm-hmm. An act to play to try and balance the books or whatnot.
Sure, sure. Know? A new survey by polling firm YouGov, not something that I can say I've heard of, but
they're a British company.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Consumer attitudes. Thank we know you. All about them.
For solidifying this a little bit for us.
Yeah.
Says that buzz surrounding Samsung in the shadow of the decision has actually risen dramatically, surpassing that of Apple, particularly in the 18 to 34 age group. So... The methodology here was kind of interesting. They asked all these people, have you heard anything about this brand in the last 2 weeks through advertising, news, or by word of mouth? And then they were asked to answer positively or negatively. And then the firm turns that score into a number between 100 and negative 100, you know, weighing the negative against the positive. And I guess Samsung is coming out ahead of Apple. And there are even, you know, there were articles, I think last week Forbes had an article about how Apple perception of Apple, even by people, you know, who are, you know, in the Apple ecosphere on social networks, were kind of negative for how the outcome mm-hmm. came on this. So ultimately, I don't know, might not be the worst money spent for a company like Samsung in this position.
We did a survey recently, which we're going to talk about in another context a bit later. But one of the questions we asked folks was how they felt about their devices and whether they liked their devices. And Samsung came out on top in that as well this year.
Interesting.
So there was something like 82% of people said that they really thought their Samsung devices were excellent, which is up from about 76% last year. So there's a rise, but all the others have gone down. HTC have gone down. Motorola have gone down. And I think that, you know, consumers are just not really paying much attention to the patent fight. Would be my
shocking.
Yeah. I mean, do they even understand
it? Exactly.
Right. They understand it. They see the dollars and go, whoa, that's crazy. And then just decide what they want to get, you know?
And the thing is, I think Samsung is a company that has a strong brand, I don't know, loyalty, but a brand presence, a brand identity. Yeah.
TVs,
monitors,
cameras.
TVs. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's computers and stuff like that. So I think that the phone business is just one aspect of that. So.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I am still a Samsung fangirl, and we are going to move on to some email. Last week, we talked about GPS apps, and I can't remember exactly the context, but I remember it was about offline maps. And I was talking about Google Maps and offline maps. We were giving our tips, and now we have a few more from some of you out there. This is from the Green Sakine. How do you say that? Do you know how to say that?
No. Oh, sorry. I was looking at the other email.
Hi, gang.
The Green Sakine.
You recently had a question about an app to store locations. Starring items in Google Maps is generally pretty good for that, but an even better option for those of us who like to go camping is My Trails by developer Frog Sparks. I'm going to give that to Chad in the chat room here. The app allows you to download maps for offline use, and it has an incredibly wide variety of map sources to choose from. This is huge for campers and hikers because you can select a map source, including topography, data, and trails. Then you can cache that map offline and view it as you like. To top it off, not only can you store point locations, but you can also track your entire hike. The app is quite adept at creating GPS trails and has a wide variety of tweaks for how much and how often GPS data is collected. The free version is very fully featured and has no advertisements. The paid-for version, $2.75, adds the ability for you to overlay multiple past GPS tracks on top of your current map view, among other things. Check it out. It's pretty top-notch. Thank you, the Green Sakine. Also from Marlin, the guy from Trinidad. Hey, AAA crew, the reason I highly recommend...
He had recommended Compass during the show. This is kind of why he had dropped that in there.
The reason I highly recommend Compass as well as the Catch note-taking app is that you can save a note about the place, tag it, add a picture, create a stream, and easily view it. any maps application because it records the latitude and longitude and even altitude. It's one of my core apps that I always install on every device since I started using it 2 years ago, and it has steadily improved. It's actually good enough to win the arena, I think.
Well, too late. We just blew the cover
anyway,
on that one.
I hope you pass it on to the caller and really have him check out what I think would he would be. Please, let me give you this link super quick, Chad, and that is Compass.
I mean, these are two great solutions that, that I love that we have smart fans, followers of the show that have other ways, because there's a million different ways you can do these things, and we couldn't possibly, know or follow them all. So
Compass is a pretty looking app.
Yeah.
It is a nice app.
Yeah, you can drop your location, take a picture around it. Thanks to both of you guys. These are great recommendations, and hopefully that helps. I believe it was Jack in last week's episode, as far as options for that.
All right. I think it's time to move to hardware. Shall I run down the list of Kindles?
Oh, right.
Announced?
This was a stacked hardware week of announcements that made a lot of news, right?
Oh, my
most
Lord.
Wonderful time of the year. It's the announcement time.
Okay, I don't think we really need to talk about the e-readers, but I have to say the Kindle Paperwhite.
Yep.
Paperwhite.
Have a hard time. That looks pretty impressive, guys. If you like e-ink readers, and I do actually, I'm not going to buy one because I have a Nexus 7, I have an iPad. There's no reason for me to buy one, but I do miss reading on e-ink. And if you love your e-ink reader, I'm telling you, that Paperwhite, I have a hard time saying it, looks pretty darn awesome. 8 weeks of battery life? Holy clamoly. Yeah.
That beats my sort of 4 hours on this.
Yeah. on your HTC One X.
Goodness. Yeah. Okay, so just a little shout out to that.
Yeah, I just the e-readers, it just reads books. That's it.
What's wrong with that?
I need something more. I need something with more functionality. Something more. Maybe
some people.
Immediate.
That's all they
no,
need.
I know.
anyway.
Luckily,
all right.
They had some other announcements.
They had a lot of Fires to announce as well. The original Fire is now bumped to $159, and it's faster. It's supposed to be 40% faster. But there was also the Kindle Fire HD 7-inch. 1280 by 800 HD display. They were touting about the Dolby Audio, dual band, dual antenna. So they're saying that the reception for Wi-Fi is better than before. 1.2 gigahertz dual core processor. They've got all these. There's a camera, front-facing camera, and it comes preloaded with Skype. And of course,
their own tailor-made around their hardware versions of things like Skype. So that's interesting.
So, and with that, you get Prime Instant Video and all the Kindle Learning and all of that stuff. And they have some other announcements with respect to, I forget the movie thing, what that's called. The
Movie Prime.
No. There's a thank you, X-ray for movies. Thank you, Chad. When you're watching, you can find out who was that actor. And
so it's like
built-in
AR.
Yeah.
It's kind of like augmented reality.
Exactly.
Stuff. Not reality. Augmented data.
So that was one device that's been updated, and that's $199.
Which isn't bad.
Not bad at all. And then they went ahead and announced an 8.9-inch device for $299, 19x20, 1200 up to 1080p HD display. Also the Dolby Audio, the dual band antenna, all that other stuff that I mentioned on the 7-inch goes to the 8.9-inch. That's not going to be available till November. And then they pulled out another card. They went ahead and said there's a $500 device, 8.9-inch, that will have 4G. And the 4G is 250 megabytes a month for $49.99. For the year. 250 megs probably wouldn't be enough. You couldn't stream this show for that without getting dinged. But I think they're going to have other plans. What there's going to be for the 8.9 and the 7-inch, there's going to be both 16 gig and 32 gig devices available. What was the other? Oh, the big controversy about the Fires were the ads. That are automatically on the Fires, but now you can opt out for $15. The thing about the ads, though, from what I understand from people who have held the Fire, the ads are really cool stuff, like dollar off Amazon MP3. They're not
for
just
now.
Trailers and stuff.
For
you
now.
Think they're going to get worse?
Yeah, if they're house ads.
No,
I don't think they're going to get worse, but if their house ads and Amazon is saying a dollar off, things like that, they're going to make it a little easier to swallow, but once their ad sales force starts selling it and you start seeing movie ads and you start seeing...
There's trailers, but,
You start seeing...
On the lock screen.
Yeah, obviously that's a personal preference type thing. People are blind to ads and can just block them out. Some people don't want them anywhere, marring up their experience.
It'd be interesting to see how many people actually pay that $15.
Most people won't.
What's funny is that as someone who has made part of his income in businesses that require advertising, I'm very thankful to everyone who watches ads. Thank you for watching ads. But at the same time, I'm ready to kill myself over Spotify. I'm ready to pay for it.
I'd pay for it from the word go because you're trying to chill out to music, the last thing you want is buy this now.
You haven't been here and subjected to the Dave Matthews Band on tour again. It's like, listen, if I'm listening to The Jam, I don't want to hear a Dave Matthews Band ad. I mean, seriously, use your smarts. You know this. But anyway.
I'm glad they backtracked and they put the option for those of you who don't want the ads.
$15. Yeah, so do you think this was a planned thing? Because on older Kindles, at least Kindles, not Kindle Fire, but on older Kindles, you could get an ad-supported version that was automatically less expensive. Yep. Or you could, pay more and get one relieved of ads. Mm-hmm. In this case, they kind of sold you on the single price, and then there was a lot of hoopla about
maybe they had it ready. Sometimes you do things where you're like, let's put it out there and see what happens and have a backup plan in case they react. It did come out pretty quickly. It wasn't like,
turned the boat real quick.
Yeah. I mean, like it sounds almost like they had it in case they needed it. And it looks like they did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's the whole model with these devices, right? Yeah. They're super cheap, which means they're trying to find all these ways to monetize.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's just interesting that that's how much they value the cost per user of those ads. It's $15.
Right.
Or maybe just a bit less, but yeah.
Is SwiftKey on?
So this is why I can't get too excited about the Fire. we love Amazon, and we had a great time when they were on the smartphones with the App Store, and we did the free app of the day a couple of times, and it was really cool.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And then they brought out the Fire, and because I think the opinion that I've come to is that because it's a content consumption device, they didn't want anything to interfere with the ability of folks to consume that content and make the money back that they may be losing on each device as they sell it. So they locked down that user experience in a similar way, I guess, to the way that Apple locks down it.
Yep.
And that's frustrating because actually, before that, it was one of their top-selling apps. And it still is on, regular Android. It's currently the number one app. And we wanted to be able to sell to that enormous user base of people who were buying Fires. But apparently, Jeff Bezos didn't want us to.
So. And that's the challenge is because, we got my mother a Kindle Fire for Christmas the past year. And honestly, it's been a challenge to get her to use to learn how to use the regular keyboard.
Right.
No offense to your product because I think it's a great product, but to say, and you can replace the keyboard. I think it's the one step beyond, and that's the
double-edged sword, which is what you've just said. On the one hand, the keyboard doesn't work well, right?
Exactly.
So all these people who've got Fires are this keyboard's useless. I can't use it.
But the buttons are orange.
Why can't I have Amazon.
You press it
too many times and you go straight to a sales pitch. So that's why we want to sell. Challenge, but in the same vein, we still have trouble walking people through installation processes. Yeah. And it's still a kind of pain in the ass to get through.
Even imagine. It's got to be frustrating.
Well, we built an installer that kind of goes, this is how you install a keyboard on Android. We're going to walk you through it. But, every day we get someone emailing us saying, hey, I spent $4 on your app and it
looks
the same.
You just stole
my money.
It's not Swift.
You're like, wait, did you do it?
Did you actually enable it?
Yeah, this is a learning opportunity for every one of those people under the hood, that's just how you do some of the greatest things that you can do with Android devices, which is customize it. And a lot of people don't understand or know kind of what that process entails.
It's the bane of our existence. We've got a great community manager, Evan, who spends a lot of his time dealing with questions from our users. And it's amazing, right? So in Ice Cream Sandwich, we were told, okay, we're going to make the way that you switch keyboards easier by putting it up in the drop-down notification bar. And we were like, oh, this is great. You don't have to long press, which is kind of a hidden function. But of course, the day after we updated to that, we had a ton of users go, you put this icon in the drop-down bar. Like, how dare you? I enabled your keyboard and it put this icon there all the time. And it's like, well, yeah, no, we didn't. But, say you win some, you lose some. And I guess that's the nature of these things.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we would love to be on the Fire, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Side-loading on the Kindle? I'm trying to remember back to the original Kindle Fire.
You can do that
out of the box without... Alteration?
No, you've got, if you want to install Google Play, you've got to go through a ton of...
Or know. Just any APKs. Like, is there a lot of sideloading of SwiftKey on...
Within about a week of the Fire launching, there was a post on XDA saying, this is how you install SwiftKey.
Right.
So it's possible, but I think you have to be of a particular user, you know, exactly. case. You've got to be pretty nerdy and willing to spend a while doing it, yeah.
But so what do we think of these? I mean, a bigger Fire?
That's the big question,
yeah,
right?
Elliptical.
I gotta admit, as someone who works in publishing and ebooks, I saw landscape mode, and I was like, yes, because Fire's been stuck in portrait. Now there's never been any landscape mode. So now with the 8.9, there's promise of landscape mode. So
yeah, I would imagine.
But anyway, sorry.
But I mean, that's the big question, right? Is like up until the Fire announcement, it was okay. Nexus 7, duh, that was the no-brainer choice. But we'll see what Amazon has up their sleeve. Does what they roll out win anybody over?
I don't think it wins us, but I think there is still a significant consumer base. There's the Amazon faithful that will just jump to it. Their ears are more tuned
to Amazon than they are to Google's tablet.
Yeah, and right now, considering the state of the Google Play Store, if I was a average Joe user and I'm an Amazon Prime member and they've got all this music, all these videos and all those sort of things, like if I wasn't so baked into the Google ecosystem, I was in the Amazon ecosystem, it's a no-brainer. You go with the Fire because it's all there. Yeah. It's all
so
plugged in.
Nice
and it's got a better selection and it's got better prices as we found, you know. Yeah. So, but
and that's what they're really going for. I think they're not really trying to get the kind of, you know, power user or, you know, people who are really interested in customization. They just want to give people a device that they can watch movies on, that they can read books on.
That was Jeff Bezos' point, that he thinks their consumers don't want gadgets, they want service.
Right.
That he was trying to spin that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a ton of content, so much more content coming to Amazon. So it would be interesting to me, though, the rumor that I thought might happen that didn't happen was that phone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Me too. Yeah, I was expecting a phone.
I wasn't expecting the 8.9, and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's it.
I wouldn't count that out in the long term.
Exactly,
unlike the Facebook phone, which is not going to happen, right?
Yeah. we'll see.
Okay, we'll see. Yeah. That's what Ron says.
interesting. All right, well, let's move on to another announcement, which, you know, had a lot of news for about a day. Because it was the day before
the
Amazon Kindle announcement, it got kind of muscled out. But this was the Motorola announcement, and you know, I guess it should be known that this is Motorola's first kind of hardware rollout since the completion of Google's kind of takeover of Motorola Mobility. But you know, it should also be reiterated that they said from the onset that that Motorola Mobility acts autonomously. Separated from Google. So they are their own thing. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed in some of the stuff that kind of came out of it. And I have to remind myself of that fact. but it's really hard to do that based on what we have here. So there's the Razer HD and the Razer Max HD. Both are identical to each other, except, of course, for what we know about the Razer Max is that it has a larger capacity battery for the most part. But both have a 1.5 gigahertz dual-core S4 processor, 1 gig of RAM, 32 gigs of storage, NFC, 4.7-inch Super AMOLED display. So, I mean, even right there... It sounds okay, yeah. I guess. Nothing mind-blowing.
But I think that's been the story of the Motorola phones, is that they've been good. I don't think they've been mind-blowing, but they've been good.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a time when they were mind-blowing. You know what I mean? In the early days, in the Motorola Droid plane, whatever you want to call it, that was the phone, and that was the hardware to beat.
The thing I heard about the Razer Max, is that their battery life is really, really good. I don't know if you guys have...
Yes.
And that, absolutely. For me, is the big differentiator on Android, right? If you can... have a device. I met a guy who was using one, and he was so passionate about it because he could go a day and a half without
the
charging.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is, for me, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
There was a time where when I had friends who asked me, they're like, I want to try Android. I'm on Verizon. I was just like, just go to the Razer Max.
Exactly.
It's going to be a good experience for you because of the battery, because it's a solid phone and feels good, you know. But
mm-hmm. so. Then they also had the Razer M. This is a $99, and that's actually shipping this week. Version with some similar specs, 1 gig RAM, 2,000 milliamp hour battery, so smaller battery, LTE, 8 megapixel rear-facing camera. But its big kind of key differentiator is what we were talking about a little bit last week about the bezel, you know, no bezel thing. It wasn't quite that, but they call it edge-to-edge, 4.3 display, 960 by 540 resolution. And what they've done here is, you know, it's a 4.3-inch display, but by making it edge-to-edge, they're able to get kind of a smaller body, obviously. So a larger screen, smaller body compared to what you might find in other phones. 1.5 gigahertz dual-core processor, again, with 1 gig of RAM. And I think what gave me a sour taste in my mouth about this announcement was the big kind of emphasis that they placed on the fact that they were buckling down on Jelly Bean. And that Jelly Bean was a big deal, blah, 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 blah. And then they announced these phones. And they're like, but, you know, these phones are releasing with Ice Cream Sandwich, and we're going to upgrade them to Jelly Bean. And I understand. I totally get it that, you know, Google's only had Motorola for maybe 3 months. And the devices were probably in the pipeline for much longer than that. So it's really hard to kind of turn the ship. I guess what I had a problem with was the way that they put it across really kind of gives you the impression that Jelly Bean is such a priority when, in fact, all they're doing is releasing with Ice Cream Sandwich and doing what anyone else would do releasing an Ice Cream Sandwich phone right now, which is to eventually release Jelly Bean. If you can't do one single system update to the current version, then you shouldn't even be playing the game. So why is that like an insanely mind-blowing feature? That, you know what I mean? Like, that just, I felt like they were kind of painting it incorrectly.
And is it Key Lime Pie that's coming next? Is that... I'm just
we
looking
think,
at rumors.
Yeah, right. It's
like by the time they start rolling out Jelly Bean, they're like, and we finally made it. And everyone will be like, what? Key Lime Pie came out half a year ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, they did have
Jelly Bean on the demo phone. So, you know, they're showing it off and saying, look, you know, we've got it and everything. But no confirmation that it's launching with Jelly Bean. There's that kind of hint that maybe it will, and in which case, maybe I'll eat a little bit of crow. But until then, it's kind of like, okay, yeah. So you're launching with Ice Cream Sandwich like anyone else, and you're going to upgrade to Jelly Bean. Okay.
I feel sorry for the OEMs. They are all the time. They're trying to sound as good as they can, and then Google will be like, and look at this new thing.
I know. No, totally. It's an arms race
in
a strange way. And what's different about this is, you know, this is an OEM that's part of the mothership in a strange way.
But everything I've heard about it is, you know, is going to be, we're keeping it separate. It's just a strategic acquisition.
Obviously.
There's a higher expectation, though. That's that you, because
it's that perception again.
We're not there. Yeah. Like, can't they have a call? Can't they have a meeting? Don't they know these things? You know, like, well, we know. I mean, organizations work very differently and that sort of thing. But yeah, they're going to be held at a higher standard.
Yeah, totally. And just real quick, one cool thing that they do have, if you purchased a Motorola phone launched 2011 and on. So newer, and it isn't set to be upgraded Jelly Bean, Motorola will give you a $100 credit towards an upgrade to select Motorola devices. These are, of course, included with a trade-in. So you don't get to keep your device. You have to trade it in, and you have to get a Motorola device. In that case, we'll give you $100.
Are they the first OEM to do something like that?
I feel like it's pretty unprecedented for the OEM to do it specifically and, you know, for a carrier not to do it or for a program, you know.
Yeah, so it's like their first admission that maybe they're not as fast as they'd like to be with some of the older
phones. Sure. Yeah. And you know, totally commend them for that. That's a good move for sure.
Does that make up any for anything?
Well, that's nice. I don't know if it necessarily makes up making a big deal out of something that... Right. I don't know. I just feel like they're selling you on this feature that isn't really a feature because everybody's going to do that right
Welcome
now.
Welcome to marketing.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's a great science.
I know.
Absolutely.
But surely that means that all those folks out there with the original Droid can go, yes, and get $100 off the next phone. So, you know.
Yeah.
Look at that. Install base.
Was it the original Motorola Droid wasn't out 2011, though.
Does it have to have been out 2011?
Yeah, 2011 and on. So.
Well, Stephen, then still, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of phones.
I'm sure it'll be a lot of phones that'll be able to do that.
So meanwhile, on the LG watch, I've been on the LG beat this week. We're going to need a graphic. It's not quite breaking news, but it's LG.
Life's good.
The much anticipated LG Intuition, also known as the Optimus VU overseas, made its domestic, what's the word I'm looking for? Domestic coming out party in New York. I can't find words today. And it's a 5-inch Galaxy Note-esque competitor. Interesting in that it's got a huge screen and a 4:3 aspect ratio.
So it's flat. It's squatty.
Yes, it's squatty. What I found really interesting, though, is some of the commentary coming out of it is that the screen size and the way it is makes it almost impossible to use it with one hand. So the being able to hold it and tap with your thumb doesn't work. But that said, because it's 4:3. It web pages look great.
Yeah.
Okay. All this stuff that we kind of cringe when we look at it on our phone and the 16:9 kind of things where you get the squat kind of view or you don't get the quite full picture actually look great and work great. So another curious entry into the 5-inch phablet category, but it looks like it's a real thing. I just wish they kept on calling it the Optimus VU. And apparently the lots of room for the keyboard. So,
right.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah.
But I guess it'd just be strange the second you try and watch a movie on it. It's like, unless it's before 2002.
Right, yeah. It's really 24. Good for watching old movies. Yeah. Like reruns of Dallas, perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you're just not a fan of letterbox versions and you always go for the pan and scan, right. Yeah, then exactly. You'll be okay.
But for $1.99, it could be interesting to see how much of a phenomenon is the Galaxy Note, and is this really a category that people want? And it's LG, and people seem to love their LG phones. So.
Yes, as we've
apparently, as we've been told over and over again,
in the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
Definitely related to that is this kind of I think it's a rumor at this point that a quad core Galaxy Note 2 might be also heading to Verizon, which Verizon was kind of left out. So that would be an on the same network competitor to the LG Intuition.
And they'll let the consumer decide.
Yeah.
And is that the same Galaxy Note 2 as the one that was unveiled at IFA? Like, that's really even bigger than the original Galaxy Note.
I
think it is. Yeah. It's just.
It's like a monster. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's like a phablet 2.0.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the matter, I mean, between 7 inches and 5, I mean, they just, it's getting, I don't know.
It's getting
smaller and bigger at the same time.
Pretty soon we're just going to be talking like this.
Yeah, we make fun of it, but
this is
a couple of years.
There's this amazing British comedian who runs around town going, hello, on a massive blow-up phone. It's called Dom Jolly. You should YouTube
soon,
him.
That's not going to be funny.
Yeah, no, it's going to be like be real life.
I don't get it.
We're going back to the 80s.
Yeah, it's funny. We're going back to the Zach Morris phone. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, retro chic is in, I guess. Speaking of retro chic, where is that tablet? The Acer Iconia Tab. A700. I don't think that's a good thing, actually, that it's retro. But I did a review of this for Before You Buy. I have a full review up on YouTube. If you go to the Twit channel, and just a super quick on this, probably closely compares to the Asus TransformerPad Infinity. It's $50 less than that, and I would absolutely spend the extra $50 and just get the TransformerPad Infinity. Wow, this thing is not very. It has a great screen. That's about it. So check it out, Acer Iconia Tab A700 review, if you so choose and are in the market for a 10-inch tablet.
For all the Acer fans out there.
There's got to be Acer super fans.
Okay, Acer super fans, come write us. We've been,
I just like to poke the bear. I just like to poke the bear of brand loyalty.
We talked about LG. That was me.
Any Acer fan sites?
believe me, we are going to get a few emails about from Acer fans.
Who's got the Acers? All right, bring it.
All right, let's take an email here. Daniel writes in and says, I'm a huge fan of SwiftKey, but I have a concern.
Good guy.
If Apple
gets... not the concern, sorry.
Right. Well, it's good to be concerned about things.
The timing
sure.
of this email is just...
I know,
right? If Apple gets its patent for predictive words upheld, what does that do to SwiftKey? It is a bit of a broader question for all developers as much as for software patents used to hammer HTC and Samsung are available in third-party apps. Hey, what do you know?
I flew here just for this.
Oh, it's SwiftKey, and you could possibly answer this question a lot more than we could.
So I think that the first thing to say is that, patents are everywhere. We've got a ton of them. We haven't got anywhere near as many as some of the tier one OEMs like Apple and Samsung have.
Sure.
But they're just there because when you come up with something that's unique and individual, you want to protect that idea, right? So we're not concerned about this particular fight because it doesn't involve us. It's between Apple and Samsung. What we're really committed to, though, is doing stuff that's new and innovative. And if you read the writ that Samsung got the other day, I pulled it up earlier, it says something along the lines of, this is because Apple was revolutionary in this area and Samsung copied all these features, and it's a direct criticism of essentially Samsung not being innovative. what we've done with SwiftKey since day one has been innovative ourselves. We've really pushed to come up with our own ideas to protect those ideas and to really try and think about how people want to type on touch screens. So we're not worried because we've not copied anyone. We've been creative. And
That gets into such murky waters, though, because you've clearly used other keyboards on other phones, right? So, like, where do you draw the line between this is what somebody else is doing and this is this new idea when it's such a basic concept of a user interface to enter in letters?
As I say, I'm not a patent lawyer, but you look at these patents, and these guys,
by the way, and I've had to talk about this stuff endlessly.
You're really close. I think you're like one correspondence close from actually being paralegal.
Don't let Marie speak up, because I actually studied patent law for a little time, but I'm not qualified in any sense. But, you know, what these guys are doing is they're trying to copyright every little patent, every little piece of the visual UI. And what we did is we just built a simple UI that had three solid predictions, which actually we did first and a few other platforms now use. Yeah. And then we just focused on the engine. For us, it was all about how do we create a brain that sits under your phone that understands the way that words work together. And that was really the challenge for us. It was about trying to create something that was smart with the words that you've inputted. So we're less concerned about all these nitpickings over like the actual display of words. And if you look at the pattern that they reference in this case, it's about how the iPhone has inline predictions that are completed and you can cross them off. It's that feature. Yeah. And, you know, it might be true that the judge holds that it's broader than that and everyone has to stop doing any kind of inline or button. I don't know. You know, it's nitpicking, right? But for us, what we're proud of and what we really focused on is building that engine that's intelligent and smart. And we're unique in that sense. Mm-hmm. No one else did that in the same way that next word predictions kicked in right on the device. There's no cloud needed to do that. And so that was really what we were proud of doing. And so I think, you know, to Daniel, thank you for being a huge fan of SwiftKey. Don't worry, we're committed to innovation and we're going to keep doing cool things like that. So
now to turn real quickly to turn around, though, how much defense of your patents do you do? Like, do you look at other keyboards and be like, oh, they're scamming on us? Or are you not there yet?
You know, like, suing people is a dirty business. It goes on for years. You need loads of money to do it. It's not something that we're here to do, you know. Yeah. If we wanted to be in the suing business, we would have set up a patent troll company. And we would scoop up all these patents and then go around suing people. We're here to innovate. So we're focused on that. And for the time being, we're happy with the way things are going, definitely.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are plenty of ways to analyze text and, you know, and make your own kind of inferences based on that, guys are doing one way of that.
The irony, right, is that the patent system was invented to try and protect creativity so that more people would be creative, so that people wouldn't have to make the same breakthroughs twice, so that you could look at the patents that people had and go, right, now how can I improve on this again? How can I continue to innovate and move forward? So it's actually about knowledge sharing, not kind of massive billion-dollar lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And it's just
knowledge,
a shame.
Knowledge hoarding.
Right, exactly. Right. It's just a shame that it's become this way because, you know, there are a ton of publications that do features on, like, who's suing who in the smartphone industry, and it's literally everyone. And the only people who are winning are the lawyers.
I think some of the companies are winning too, because as Apple
wins, it gets sued from another. Spring.
Right, true. And I don't get me wrong. I'm the whole lawyer and stuff like that. But I mean, what I think what's interesting that got introduced is the idea of being able to build a business around licensing and being able to say, yes, we own that patent. And if you want to use this technology, you can. Now you just got to pay us some money. I mean, Microsoft is a great example of that. You know, so.
But that's only as good as the enforcement, right? And so, yes, you may win in a San Jose courtroom, but will you win in, you know, the Far East, where they have a completely different system? It's much harder to get writs to stop people selling things, you know. So it's always going to be a challenge. But I think for us, as a small little British developer who's committed, I'm saying that. I'm not talking about me. I work in a company full of brilliant developers, but we're much smaller than Apple or Samsung. You know, we're committed to building great products, and I think that for the time being, that's working pretty well for us. So hopefully we can not get involved in any of these big fights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're on the right track. So, yeah, awesome.
Awesome. All right, let's jump into the apps section. Let's jump into it.
Dive in.
Everybody get up out of your chairs.
I like how the audience is dancing.
I know.
Jump.
I mean, this is great. Like,
the audience is jumping.
Them.
Yeah.
Whoop. I wish we had an audience cam. It's literally like, you guys
and they're
can't,
like, no, I mean, please do not show me dancing.
It would be
everyone on the audio and video can't see it, but we literally have like 75 people. Oh, no, now we just ruined it.
Great, Chad. Thanks,
Chad.
actually, go back to that camera for a second. It would be very easy to do the wave. Go.
Yeah, go.
Woo! Yay! All right.
Oh, wow. Cool. I never get to see the back of my head.
There you go.
There you go.
Oh,
not good. Balding yet.
No, not yet. The fade is nice.
All right. Hey, so Android users get some bad rap. And we've talked about this in the past, about how Android users are kind of lumped into the cheap
what's up with that?
Category. Like, yeah. Android users are cheap. They don't buy apps. Well, guess what?
They do.
They will, awesome. And they do now. And I think that has a lot to do with the kinds of apps that are available and better apps that are available in the App Store.
Yeah, it's only getting better and better.
The thanks to SwiftKey.
The SwiftKey show?
I know.
You know what's interesting about this show is I promise you none of this stuff was like, oh, we've got Joe from SwiftKey coming on. Let's find stuff that relates to it.
These are
things that we've tagged throughout the week and then we read it and we're like, wait a minute. They're in there.
It's in the zeitgeist.
Well, SwiftKey. Yeah,
control you.
So you chose a very good week to come on, by the way.
Something's going on with SwiftKey that I don't think we know about.
Just you wait.
So some data provided by SwiftKey has compared Android users and app purchases in 2011. The data looked at how many users bought over 20 paid apps in 2011. That number was just under 10% of users, while iOS was just under 40% in 2012. Almost 20% of users are buying more than 20 apps, while approximately 25% of iOS users are buying more than 20 apps. That's an interesting kind of flip-flop.
So I just put the link to our blog, which actually has the graph.
Oh, excellent.
I don't know if we can bring that up on the screen. Yeah.
I'll send that to Chad. I have it right here. Chad, it's coming your way.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit more about those numbers? That's really interesting. So Android users are not cheap.
No.
And it has to do, again, I think, with just the types of apps.
Android users are people. They're regular people. I think iPhone users are particularly minted. Mm-hmm. They live in the big cities. They love showing off, and they got loads of money, right? No, I'm completely and utterly exaggerating. But, you know, the way in which the iPhone platform was built was always money first. You had to put your credit card in to even activate your phone, which meant that when an app popped up that you thought looked cool, you'd be like, yeah, cool. And then it was just that instant, seamless buying experience. And that's something that Google, I think, ever since Android became popular, have been trying to catch up with because it really helps to monetize the platform. Mm-hmm. You know, way back when we launched our beta of SwiftKey, there was no paid app ecosystem on Android. It came later. And, you know, and they took Google Checkout before it was called Google Wallet and they pushed it in there. And the two didn't really sit very comfortably together. So you had a ton of billing issues and things. But that was in 2010. 2 years down the line, we've got Google Play. It's an ecosystem full of content. It's super easy. You've got Google Wallet, which has been kind of redone from the ground up to make it easy to give people money and to make small payments. And that really has helped things. And this is what comes out in the data. So we did a massive survey, and we partnered with Mobile Nations, who run Android Central. And Phil says hi.
Oh, hi, Phil.
And Pocket Lint in the UK. Through their blogs and through our VIP community, we asked people a lot of questions. But this was one of the most interesting things that came out of that, was that actually since 2011 to 2012, there's been an incredible shift in the number of users who are happy to say, almost double, as saying that they have over 20 paid apps on their device now. Wow. On Android. And actually, the number of people who say they have over 20 paid apps on their iPhone has gone down as the iPhones become more popular and more mainstream.
Interesting.
So what you had is these kind of super, you know, free to... No, that's not the right word. These people who were super willing to pay for the things on iPhone in the beginning. And as iPhones become broader, that number of users has gone down proportionately, whereas the opposite's happened. As Android has become a more active ecosystem, more people are willing to pay for apps.
It's fascinating.
And there's also all the stuff about freemium, right? This is not even to mention freemium. So if you look at the top grossing apps on Google Play, I think like the top 20, it fluctuates, but maybe 18 out of 20 are actually free apps that people pay from within the app. And that's becoming much more influential. And I read something earlier today that was saying that, you know, by 2016, that's going to form like the majority of revenue that people make through applications.
Well, that's the case. My app in the arena is a free trial, and after I'm like, oh, I need this, and so I pay. You know, like I think I think we're learning how to evolve the payment process. Where we'll give you a little taste of it. We'll give you a certain part of functionality. You know, like at first it was it's free, but there are ads, and you can pay to get rid of the ads. But I think we're going to start seeing that tied more to functionality and the way the app works. Once you start using the app, it kind of speaks for itself.
And the other thing that I find interesting too is like how willing people are just to buy an app off the cuff. And so another thing that was found in this research is that the majority of apps that are sold, like 95% or something, I don't know, I can't remember where I read this, maybe it was one of your pieces, but it was between 99 cents and $2.99 would be the 95% of all purchases, that people paying for more than that price point are actually really super reluctant to go beyond that. And and we see that in that we are $3.99 and we get some solid sales, but the second we last week we did the end of summer sale on Google Play and we were 99 cents, and we had a spike, absolute spike of downloads, because people who are just browsing through the store, hey, it's a buck, cool, and they're much more elastic in terms of their demand.
I do not think about 99 cents. I do not think about $1.99. $2.99 is when I start to get some pause.
Right,
that's when I'm like, is this worth $3?
We're $3.99.
Unless
coffee,
it's really good.
One coffee in the morning, app for lifetime.
I can't decide.
Do I need that caffeine? Or do I want to save 30 minutes a day?
Yeah. Or app for a lifetime that you're going to use for a lifetime. There's this gap in my experience between apps that I will buy on a whim. I buy a lot of apps primarily, also because of this show, but I'm also very interested to see how it all evolves. But I buy a lot of apps, and it's interesting over time to see which are the ones that I paid $99, $2.99 for, that I still use regularly.
Yeah.
I can absolutely say SwiftKey is one of those. You also happen to create a type of app that you kind of have to use all the time. You have to have a keyboard that you use. Yeah. And, SwiftKey, I've never had any issues with paying the money to use that app. But that isn't the same for all apps. Well, I buy so many apps that I use hardly at all after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a big intellectual gap between because an app isn't real. Yeah. So there's so many of them are disposable. Like, 99 cents, I'll give it a shot. I use it. I don't like it. I take it off my phone. I still bought it. I still bought this thing that I can put on whenever I want. And we're so used to, for me, I've been agonizing over buying a new dresser. And it's been years now, and I haven't bought it because it's a big purchase. It's $500 or something. Because it's actually a thing. With this, if you added up all the money I spent on apps since the phones came out, probably paid for half that dresser. When you think about it, right? And so there's this weird disconnect between the value of the money you're spending and what you're getting for it, and how you value it when it's on your device. There are very few apps where I'm like, this is worth all $3 I paid for this. But really, when you think about an app like SwiftKey that you're using every day for years.
And maybe we should make it $100. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm thinking you should do. Yeah.
Or subscription.
Yeah. 1 cent per 100 characters. We're giving you bad ideas. I'm sorry. I take it all back.
Some sort of complicated
the way it is.
Business model that is really, we need a graph, number of keys pressed over time.
As long as I'm sort of stroking my beard.
Cool. So speaking of, we were talking about earlier about Google Play and talking about how it's trying to, get an edge in the marketplace, and it's not as strong as Amazon. Well, Google, similar to whenever Google wants to get the word out about one of their products, they dip into their pockets. And as someone who flies a lot and travels a lot, I'm very familiar, and you might be too, with Boingo, the Wi-Fi service, which is pretty much in nearly every airport I've ever been in. Mm-hmm. Google is going to be sponsoring the Wi-Fi through more than 4,000 hotspots from Boingo through the end of September. And it's all sponsored by the Google Play Store. So the sponsor locations include 15 airports, including Kennedy, O'Hare, SeaTac, Manhattan subway stations, and thousands of hotels, coffee shops, and malls. So if you're looking for free Wi-Fi, if you're in a major city somewhere, you see the Boingo logo, it's going to be free until the end of September. So take advantage of it. And remember, it was Google Play that gave it to you. So.
Mm-hmm. To what extent do you think this is not them against Amazon, but them against iOS, on the eve of... big announcement, you know, and because that's interesting. What I was talking to a friend of mine earlier, and he was saying, you know, it's great if you've got Android, but, you know, there's iPhone users that are out there who can't use this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, you're getting territorial now.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, something like this, I mean, it's I think it solves a lot of, not problems, but challenges. I mean, right. It's brand awareness, it's, you know, it's affinity, it's all these sort of things. There, I mean, Google Play is very much Android, but it's not just Android. There's other, you know, like
PCs and laptops.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think it's kind of against everybody. But I for one wonder the validity and the success of these. Like, so for here in America, on Virgin America, for what was it, a year or 6 months, they had free Chromebooks that you could check out, you know, totally for free and borrow for the flight. Mm. I didn't hear any results that now Chromebooks are like the number one laptop. So I don't know how effective this marketing is, but yeah, you know, they're trying.
It's free Wi-Fi, which I guess is good.
I know I'm going to use it several times.
Yeah. Boingo isn't cheap, you know. You can spend $15 without even thinking. Yeah. So,
And then real quick before we enter the arena, I had a thing. I was camping last weekend. And
birthday
I had
weekend.
Yes. Thank you again. And I, you know, we were in a place that didn't get any coverage. So I put my phone into airplane mode. And just kind of, you know, did the things to dial it back because I had lost my spare battery, but I wanted to be able to use the camera and all that kind of stuff. Yet my battery was still just going crazy, like still draining really fast, and I was trying to figure it out. So I opened up my battery thing, and Chad, if you go to my Google Plus post, you'll actually see the screenshot that I took. Jeez. The Amazon App Store was eating 24% of my battery.
And you wonder why I don't check it every day.
Well, I never check it, and I hadn't checked it in weeks. I have not opened that app yet. It still stayed on my phone and apparently used 24% of my battery in that one instance.
Was it just pinging? Or?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know if having my phone in, you know, airplane mode was confusing it or what the case
honestly,
was.
I bet you that's what it was because it's looking for those updates.
Well, that's horrible design.
Yeah.
Anyways.
They should fix that.
Well, apparently they may have with a version 4.0. This released, I think, last week sometime. They promised that it's fixed to the horrible battery bug that has plagued the app. This is not the case for everyone, though. It doesn't affect everyone. It's not even on your list.
It's not even on my list.
Yeah, I did the Google Plus post, and I only had a handful of people that were like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Everybody else is like, I use it all the time, and it's not even on there.
Yeah. I got to tell you, these phones, the batteries, these screens just kill you.
Yeah, the screens obviously kill you, so... I mean, well, in this case, the screen was 34%. The App Store was 24%. Like, it was kind of on par. Yeah. So anyways, it could have been an isolated incident. However, I know that once this happened, I was like, you know what? I'm not even using it anymore. I have no use for it. I'm going to uninstall it and see how it goes. And I don't know if it's placebo or what, but my battery has been awesome since I uninstalled it. So anyways,
one of the things, because the DRM control on, I could be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the DRM control on the Amazon App Store requires the app to be installed, right? So
it does. Mm-hmm.
And so that's the problem, right? Because if the app is doing goofy things, but you want some of the apps you've paid for, you have to have both running.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I guess that's why it's important that they fixed it.
Well, you know, over the course of, you know, the months since it was installed or since it was launched and I installed it, I had, you know, added, I don't know, somewhere around 120, 130 of the free apps to my list.
Which we don't
I
even get in the UK.
I only installed a handful of those. Yeah. You don't get it in the UK.
Oh, no, they just launched, I think, maybe a month ago.
So.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah, that's right. We talked about that.
And out of those, maybe five that I would ever use on a regular basis. I've purchased all of those in the Play Store because of the, you know, more rapid updates. And now this, like now I can still use business calendar, which is something that, you know, is a have to have app on my phone. So I don't know, you know, your mileage may vary. Maybe this update will address this, but I kind of don't want to go back. I'm kind of okay without it.
That's fair.
Yeah, but I want you guys to feel my pain.
I do.
Okay, I'm happy
you found that extra battery.
I did. Okay, check this out.
I know the answer too.
So, okay, this is so unrelated. We'll get into the arena in a second. On the drive home from camping, my daughter threw up in the back seat.
Oh,
first time I've dealt with that one. That was a lot of fun. So we ended up getting the car detailed yesterday. And this morning I go to drive my daughter to daycare and I go to put my coffee in the thing. And there it is. There's my spare battery, my backup battery. They found it during the detailing. So yay.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's been a wondrous day. Let's jump into the arena.
To enter, one lives. Android Arena.
I'm not entirely sure if she threw up the battery. Or,
ooh, that's a horse of a different color.
The battery was clean, though, so I don't. Oh, yeah, maybe they detailed the battery too, but I don't think she ate my battery. Okay, there's that. So last week we had an arena of epic proportions. Sure, why not? We'll call it that. We had Tweedle, Life Meter, and Lilypad going up against each other. And the results are in. 51% voted for Life Meter. Oh yeah!
Wow, Life Meter. I thought Tweedle was gonna win. To be honest,
yeah, it was kind of a low voting. Yeah.
You know,
episode.
You know, I think people really like Tweedle, but I just discovered it doesn't have multiple accounts. I should have dinged it for that.
Yeah, that's a big one right there, for sure. Lilypad came in second with 31%. Tweedle came in third with 18%. Low vote count on that as a whole. So maybe the quality of apps wasn't up there.
Short week, like post-holiday week in the States.
But he was hungover or something. I don't know.
Do better, people.
Whatever. Well, let's start over.
You've got four apps to vote on this week.
Right.
Starting with Eileen.
Okay, well, one thing I didn't mention with the new Kindle Fires is that they have something called Kindle Free Time, which I think it has not been talked about as much, and I think is a really cool feature on the new Fires, is the fact that multiple accounts can be created on the Fires, and then you can give, how much time you want to give on the Fire to your kid when they're playing a game or whatnot. I mean, I think that's something maybe you would be interested in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as a feature for any tablet.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's like a really cool feature, I think, for people who have the Fire and who have kids. Along that same line, the reason why I bring that up is that we've had lots of questions in the past about, you know, how do I limit or how do I tell or how do I not give access, if I want to give access to my phone or to my tablet, how do I make sure certain things are locked and private? And there's probably multiple ways of doing that. And I wish I could remember the person who sent this email a long time ago for this app. The app that I'm featuring is called AppLock. So kind of related to restricting certain apps or viewing certain apps without a passcode. That's what this does, essentially. It's a free app in the App Store, and essentially when you open it up, it is a way for you to lock certain apps, all your apps from anyone and who either gets your device or your phone or whatnot. So I have a little passcode here. Oh, crap, did I already screw it up? And I'll show you what that is. It's different on my phone, which is why I'm doing it on my tablet. And once you, what happens is it prompts you to have your passcode, and then later you can use a pattern code as well. And then once you create a passcode, now you have options here to lock certain apps. In the general app, it's all your apps that you've... Look, I have so many apps on this Nexus 7 here. You can choose, I can lock the Amazon App Store if I want.
Lock the calculator. You don't want kids to get
in
the calculator.
Yeah, let me lock the calculator. That's... I don't want them to learn math. In advance, these are some of the most frequently, I think, used apps or, you know, I don't want anybody using my phone on my Nexus 7, which has
a nice
phone dialer.
That's a good one.
Just in case.
Just in case.
You never know when you need a dialer.
But I lock the Google Play Store. And then within there, there's even more options here in the settings to relock after the screen is on, to allow short exits. So if you have a lock on a particular app, you don't have to verify you don't have to go through the locking. You don't have to put your passcode in again. You can have that time 15 to 5 minutes. I choose to not have that. I choose to just lock it every single time. So if I leave the app, I have to put in my passcode every single time. So, for instance, here, look, I just launched the App Store, and you saw that I locked it. So now it's the same passcode for every single app. Now, I wish I could actually change the passcode.
Passcode per app would be cool.
Passcode per app would be better. Yeah. I mean, it's a free app. What are you going to do? But I think it's actually a really cool... See, now once I opened up App Lock itself, I have to go back in to show you. But, you know, hey, there's been certain people who really want to restrict their usage or of anybody, like that guy. I keep remembering the guy who sent us that email about
the girlfriend who looked
at the phone. The girlfriend who looked at the phone and saw his porn.
I think he was doing something naughty.
But hey, he could have had multiple browsers and just locked the one browser and kept the other one clean.
Yeah. Porn browse. What's this? Oh, you need a pin code.
All of that Android is pro enabling you to look at porn.
What is that really dirty icon?
I'm just trying to say, listen, there's some private, like my text messages on my phone. Maybe I don't want somebody who's just going to pick up my phone and look at, you know, a browser. I don't want them to accidentally open up my text messages and see things that I don't want them to see.
Or Facebook, you know, you don't want to go leave your phone for 5 minutes, come back, and someone's written something terrible on your status.
Exactly.
Twitter, I was just going to say, if you work in the San Francisco tech area and you leave your phone on the table and it's unlocked and Twitter's open, you're going to get a pooping post.
Exactly.
It's going to happen every time.
Yeah. If you had App Lock, you can make sure to lock Twitter or Facebook.
That.
There you go.
And boom, no one's going to be able to tweet or Facebook from your personal phone or device.
Yep.
That's why I like this App Lock.
Cool.
I just wish that we could do different passcodes per app, and maybe that's something that they'll kind of feature in the future. But in the meantime, that is App Lock, APP Lock from Do Mobile Lab, and it's free in the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
That's a good app. Good job.
Like
Thank
it.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, I hope this doesn't...
My turn.
Yeah. Well,
Did you just lock Ron's app?
I should have locked
that app. Awesome.
1-0.
Do we have enough? How are we doing on battery?
No, we're doing okay. Here, I'll just.
Oh, you're 61. Okay. Okay. So, as we all know, I'm obsessed with the Nexus 7, and this weekend I was looking for apps and things like that. And one of the things when the Nexus 7 came out, and this is one of the reasons, again, to Jason's point earlier, why we love Android so much and why Android is such a great operating system, is because it's so versatile to the developers to actually help make it better and do things that Google either didn't think of or for whatever reason didn't implement. And so one of the things that always bugged me about the Nexus 7, one of the few things, is the fact that natively it is just locked in portrait mode. I had the Motorola Zoom. I've had some other larger format tablets. And when you rotate it landscape, the whole device would go landscape as well, except the Nexus 7 stays locked by this. And it just bugged me sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering I use this a lot for video, and the video is horizontal. It's in landscape mode. So I said, you know, there's got to be some solution for this. And sure enough, there is. It is called Ultimate Rotation Control, and it is a
snappy title.
It's a snappy title. It's right to the point, and it's just a simple app that does one thing great. So what it does?
What is that?
Marketing skills come pretty good here.
I know. Can you tell I do marketing? So when you install it, you get this little icon on your home screen. Home screen. Thank you. I was gonna say the dashboard.
I know. I want to see dashboard too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, because my day job product is called a dashboard. So anyway.
Okay.
And it's just the rotate settings. So you tap that, and this is where you can set. And there's a whole bunch of crazy settings that you can do for this. But basically, once you turn it on, now I'm not going to change any settings, but it added a little thing to the notification pane. And now when I pull down, there is a added line on the notification pane that says, I'm just going to move all your things here.
That's fine.
Rotate, and it's on right now it's on forced auto, but there's also one where you can just say it's on auto, or you can lock it in whatever mode it's in. So I'm going to put it on forced auto, close that. And ready for this? Pull out a little, Chad. Ready? And.
Whoa!
Oh, look at that. It's a Nexus 7 in landscape mode. That's it. Demo's over.
Hey, wait. Okay.
I'm dropping the mic.
That's it. Okay.
Oh, question.
Which also, wait. Hang on. Go back, Chad.
Okay.
Real quickly. Ready? Ready? And.
Are you
upside
ready?
Down?
Oh!
Rotate again? Oh, so Jason.
Unfortunately, wait, what happened?
Google Play Store.
Play Store. Come here.
Show it to me. I want to see this. Okay, so let's see here. So, okay, I'll pull it down. I don't know if you have my screen here. Do you know what that
button up at the top there?
Yeah, that's it. Yes, you can hit that, but it doesn't change the home screen.
What do you mean?
It doesn't change the home screen, dude. Trust me, I went through
this.
It
was the same thing.
No, yes, no, you're right. No, that is, but that is on the app level. But but Google with the Nexus 7.
So that forces apps.
That forces apps. This is everything.
That's pretty awesome.
That's why it is the ultimate rotation control. I don't know if you didn't hear the title.
So now I understand the ultimate.
Wait a minute, ultimate. I missed the word ultimate. Okay.
So
excellent. Good choice.
So
good stuff.
To go back into the settings, basically what you can do is there's a whole bunch of customizations. You can control whether that little notification pop-up, you can have a pop-up come up. You can control whether it appears in the notification pane. You can also change the rotation choices. And there's a whole bunch of forced
reverse
auto, lock
portrait?
Reverse portrait, auto landscape, landscape, reverse landscape. I don't know what half these do. All I know is that it gave me what I wanted.
I don't know what half these do.
In this case, then you might not need to know what half
exactly,
of those do.
Exactly. If you're bored,
because it does that one thing.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't have time to sit and be like, oh, what's reverse portrait? It's just like, it's, whatever. I did what I needed to. It's a free download for a 7-day trial, and then there's a $299 license. And trust me, if you have a Nexus 7 and you install it, you're going to pay the $299 because it's just like, because it's like, oh, this is what I wanted. So there you go. Ultimate rotation control.
Ultimate.
Oh, it's ultimate.
That's ultimate.
So now I've got to pitch mine, I guess.
Yeah, you've got to. Is yours ultimate?
Mine is ultimate. Let me not show everyone my pin code while I do this. I've got to unlock my phone. So the other day, I met someone who is working on an Android-first approach, which is cool, which means that they are one of the few developers out there that is doing something that is just on Android, even though in their instance it could be more. And it's called Scope, and it's in beta right now. So let's see if I can show you the app. So here it is, and essentially what it is, I've seen a lot of these Twitter clients and whatnot which bring everything into one feed, but what this does is it syncs with a ton of different social networks to allow you to scroll through all the content from all of them. So you can go to everything here. So I've got my Facebook, my Instagram, and
look at that. Everything's
my Twitter
in
all in one feed, which is cool, right? Because, you know, when you're waiting around, you've got 30 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes to kill. You can just load it up. What's also nice is that they've spent ages polishing the UI. So you can go into photos and you can just get Instagram as well as TwitPix and Facebook shots all in one place.
Cool.
And you can go in and share them or comment on them. And I just thought that was really nice because, you know, rather than juggling multiple apps using loads of your RAM, battery power, etc., and having several different places to press, this all brings it into this one place. And you can also post to all the networks through this kind of a bit like Path.
I was about to say, it's very much like Path.
But I just thought it was pretty cool because it just essentially means you can quickly check in, you can quickly check everything out. And it's brand new, so they're really looking for feedback from everyone. So if you can go check out Scope, let them know what you think. But I just thought it was a great example of an Android-first app that was really beautifully designed. So check it out.
I like that Android-first. I want a T-shirt that says Android-first. It's almost like it's like a political movement.
Well, I'm going to have to order one now. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
SwiftKey and Scope, Android-first.
I'll do it.
Awesome. Right on. So that is Scope, and we have the link for that in the show notes as well. My app, I don't know how... Okay, so... I'm not really quite sure exactly why I was inspired to look for this particular app, but something came up ad-wise on my phone, and I looked up, I ended up doing a search on Google and found Lookout Ad Network Detector. And basically, wow, this is so not sexy compared to Ultimate Rotation Control and some of the other apps here, but I'll attempt to show you. If you have Jelly Bean, first of all, Jelly Bean allows you to turn off and disable notifications on an app-per-app basis. So if you were to, for example, find an app that was spamming your notification with ads in particular, or just anything really, you could disable that in Jelly Bean. This is more directed at ads. This is more like ad networks specifically. That's why it's called the Ad Network Detector. But what it allows you to do, I'll go ahead and launch it here. It allows you to go in and start a scan, and it'll scan all of your apps installed on your phone. And it'll come back with kind of a summary of some of the things that you wouldn't want to necessarily happen. Things like, you know, the ability of this app to throw an ad into your notification bar, you know, a bunch of other things. And it'll kind of show you which apps are doing what and what ad networks they're they're doing it through. So if you happen to know of a particularly bad ad network that you don't even want associated with your phone, this would allow you to dial in, find out which app is actually using that, and remove it. I tried as hard as I could to find an app that would spam my notification tray with ads, and I couldn't find any.
That's good.
I know. That's actually a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
But for the purposes of this demo, it didn't really help me out. So nothing comes up in that one. But I do have one here that's phone call, SMS, or camera on ad touch, which means that it can pass that information. If I open it up, M-Ocean, and if I go into that, Skype. Hey, what do you know? Skype does this. But it gives you all this information about the behavior of each individual, each of the individual behaviors and kind of the privacy implications. And really, this is just kind of a companion for your phone to allow you to, because I mean, I'm sure we've all done it. We've all installed apps and not really thought about kind of the permissions that we're giving these apps. This is one way to kind of take a look at it after the fact and say, okay, of the apps that I have, what are they allowed to do when it's related to ads? And it might, the results might surprise you.
It's like the terms of service. You just agree to it.
Yeah, agree to it. Yeah. And then, in many cases, you probably never know exactly what that means on the other side. Things like replace the dialer ring with an advertisement. Wow, would I be pissed about that.
Wow, that's bold.
I'd love to know what app does that. Yes, I know. I know, right? collect device or mobile network information. There's 14 on here. That's probably a pretty common one. Some of these aren't necessarily red flags, but they're things to maybe just be aware of. Adding icons to your desktop. I've had some ads do that. This scans for all of them, and it's just a huge list of ad networks that it kind of pulls from and everything. And I'm not too nerdy about what ad networks do what. AdMob, I know I've heard of a lot and whatever, but maybe some of these ad networks are more reputable than others. And if you see those in there, it might be a good idea to dive right into it and see which one. Tom loves Angela. There you go. Actually, I should mention this whole series of apps, the talking animal apps, they totally do the spam spam and the notification thing. You pay 99 cents, mm-hmm. but then you still get these reminder notifications later that just appear out of nowhere, like, Tom wants to talk to you. It's so annoying. Or you get ads in the app itself. So this app can help you find those things. So anyways, that is Lookout Ad Network Detector. It is free. And, we've all heard of Lookout before.
Lookout's this is reputable.
Yeah, this is kind of a side app for them, so.
One added note on the Ultimate Screen.
Oh, here we go again.
Is that it's not Nexus 7 limited. It works on all tablets and phones. So there you go. Okay.
Fine, Ron. Fine.
For all those phones that are locked down.
Right.
Need a bit of Ultimate.
Listen, once you go Android landscape, it's like, oh, look at that. Like the tray is over here. Like it's neat. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, because my phone doesn't do that either. It locks.
No, you should install that app on your phone too.
All right, anyway.
Okay, so check it out. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to bit.ly/AAApoll76. bit.ly/AAApoll76, and let us know which is your favorite app this week. Is it AppLock, Ultimate Rotation Control, Scope, or Lookout Ad Network Detector? And
vote Scope.
Yeah, votes are coming in. Lookout's doing pretty poorly. All the votes really aren't coming in.
There we go.
Now they're kicking in.
Yeah. They're listening to me.
Scope actually is an app you're going to use a lot.
It's quite nice.
Rotation control just works in the background. It's kind of like an alternator. It just works.
Mm. It's just fixing something that should have always been fixed.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Sure.
So, anyway.
Excellent. All right. Well, those will happen over the next week as they do. And maybe we'll check on it in a little bit. But that is it. Do we have anything else on the...
We only have one thing left.
What?
Oh. Birthday cake! Let's light this birthday cake!
All right. Should we save it for afterwards? Allude to it? Or
no,
are we actually doing it?
We're live.
Come on.
Live. You're going to leave this in the show.
Whoa.
What kind of a lighter is that?
Super
lighter.
Okay. Flamethrower.
Right. Got no eyebrows left.
You don't need to sing.
All right.
Happy birthday.
Woo!
Yay! Thank you very much.
Is this your birthday?
Thank you.
Woo! The fire alarms.
Yeah. Well, that would actually be kind of cool.
Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you for the cake. Thank you for the wishes. That, but that's it. Let's eat the cake afterwards.
Okay. Right? Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
All right, cool. Joe, thanks so much for coming on and hanging
Thank
with
you
us.
Guys. Yep.
Thank
really
you,
appreciate
Joe.
It. This is your chance
came all this way, 5,500 miles
just for this.
And
you know, I think we'll give you a slice of cake, too.
Awesome.
I think you've earned it.
Made it.
You've earned it after this whole show. This is your chance to plug anything, although I have a pretty good idea what you might want.
Vote Scope. No, it'd be great if you guys could check out SwiftKey. And by the way, Scope is not mouthwash. It's a great app. check out SwiftKey. You know, try it. It's better than everything else out there. What more can I say?
There we go.
Search for on Google Play. It's number one right now. Let's stay number one in the world on Google Play, please.
Boom.
Number one.
All around on Google Play right now.
Apart from in Japan, Russia, Thailand, and South Korea. So if you're out in any of those places, please get
it. You guys are a force.
Yeah. And Hong Kong.
SwiftKey.net. You go to .com, you're going to get an entirely different
Oh, yeah. They're trying to sell you a little tool that helps you keep your keys together. So SwiftKey.net or just SwiftKey on Google Play.
There you go. Awesome. Thanks again, Joe.
Thank you.
Definitely have you back. Ron, go.
Cool. You can find all my ultimate information about me at about.me/RonXO. It's ultimate.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Ultimate Eileen, go.
Scope is pretty cool. You can find me on about.me/EileenRose or on Twitter at EileenTV.
And I am on about.me/JasonHowell and Twitter at JasonHowell. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us.
You can leave us
a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can always send us an email or send us a link to a video mail via email at aaa@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. You can find our show notes at twit.tv/AAA. We've got the entire show notes, the ones we use during the show, so you get everything. And you can also find past episodes on our site, as well as iTunes and YouTube and a bunch of other places. Finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Have a great week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Let's eat cake.
Happy
Yay!
Birthday!
Happy birthday!
Make a wish.
Slice.
I already made the wish.
29 is going to do well for you.
Yes.
I think this is the year, Jason.
Woo!